California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil. With me, as always, is my trusty co-host, Camille, the best and fastest researcher in the West. And tonight, we have not one, but two guests for you. Two founders of the Christian Caucus of the Libertarian Party, which is fitting that they actually ended up being on this podcast this week, right before Christmas. So it's kind of fitting. It's kind of like a Christmassy Christian episode for the California Underground Podcast. So Merry Christmas to everybody. Jacob and Kara, welcome to the show. How are you guys?
Hey, good. Thanks for having us on. We're stoked to be here.
Yeah, I'm fantastic. I'm remembering what it's like to be young and stay up to ungodly hours of the night. So glad to be here with you guys, though.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob, for staying up. You're on the East Coast right now, so this is tuning into a California podcast, being a trooper. So why don't you guys just first off start off, why don't you introduce yourselves and who you are, how you're involved in the Christian Caucus, and let's just start there.
I guess I could start with how it first got started. I was kind of looking for a place within the Libertarian Party, if there was already some kind of Christian caucus, because I was willing to just kind of join up if there was one. The only thing I could find was like a dormant Twitter and a defunct website with nothing going on. I did come across the Libertarian Christian Institute. I had already been following Jacob on Twitter for a while. He actually like jumped into a same like thread that I was kind of going back and forth with this girl. She was kind of like hating on, I don't know if he remembers that or not, but she was kind of like hating on church and Christians and stuff. And she was another libertarian. And like he kind of, and I go, oh, this guy's like, you make sense. So I started following him and I really liked his takes on a lot of stuff. I felt like our views and our values lined up a lot. So when I was looking to start this caucus, because there wasn't one, I was just looking for it. I didn't have like any specific like aspirations of like, oh, I just want it to be so big and like, you know, be the biggest thing in the party. I was just like, I just want to find other Christians in the party who want to do work where Christianity and libertarianism intersect, because it just wasn't sitting right with me to just do any kind of work in the liberty movement. And, you know, it could easily, you know, if you just go wherever the wind blows, next thing you know, it's sex work is work type of advocacy or something in the Libertarian Party, if you're not careful, or like, you know. And I'm going, like, I feel like this pull to do what God would want me to be doing. And so that's just kind of, so I started like kind of reaching out in places. Like, we're both part of the Mises Caucus, and I like reached out in there, and some people in there were interested. But Jacob was a co-founder from the beginning with me. And I don't know if you have any other thoughts about the start, Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way you pitched it to me, it was funny because we had all kind of, when we got together and started talking about it, we were pretty much on the same page from the beginning that we wanted a sort of home, you know, both like from a social, cultural perspective, and then from a, you know, networking, political perspective for Christians to come to when they entered libertarian circles. And, you know, the Libertarian Party specifically have a place to go to. I mean, there's great, you know, organizations like the Libertarian Christian Institute, which I have their book right here to my left, that exist in the liberty movement. But, you know, there wasn't really an active group of Christians coalitioning and working together in the political apparatus of the libertarian movement, which is the LP. And so we felt like there was great opportunity to, you know, to do that and to focus on, you know. And, you know, listen, I'm also a member and an organizer in the Mises Caucus, and I, you know, support a lot of what the Mises Caucus does. There's definitely overlap there, but there are issues that we as Christians want to specifically focus on that aren't really the mission of the Mises Caucus. And so, We wanted to have a place where Christian libertarians could come together and kind of coalition on those things that we want to coalition on within the Libertarian Party space, so to speak. So yeah, I think Kara kind of summed up the beginning there pretty well.
Yeah. And then one other thing I'll just could tag on real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was going to say the other thing is we kind of wanted a bi-directional thing. I was involved with starting a group at my old church, and there is one where I live now in Fallbrook. Our church has a group too, that's like a politically action oriented group or ministry within the church. And we have a lot of those actually in California, but some people don't have those. And so I also wanted to help people bring that, you know, action to their local church and like some kind of biblical action ministries, and other places too. So we wanted to bring Christian influence and have a home for Christians in the party, but we also wanted to bring like libertarianism to our churches and like political action that we, you know, so kind of both directions.
So this may be an odd question, but hear me out. For either of you, which came first, chicken or the egg? Were you Christian first, then libertarian, or were you libertarian first and then you became more of a Christian? Whoever wants to jump in first.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. And I don't know. I mean, I guess the easiest answer is that I've kind of always been a Christian. I was raised in the church. I was like a pastor's kid, and I became a libertarian later in life. But I don't want to, you know, leave it at that, because I think there is something to what I went through when I discovered libertarianism, and then I began to go back and do the work of sort of like reconciling my newfound political views with my faith, because that led me down a journey that actually really deepened my faith and really made my Christian faith come more alive to me, and kind of, you know, not just in a superficial sense, but really changed the way that I view the gospel, that I view the kingdom of God and what Jesus's mission and ministry was when he walked this earth, and what it means to be ambassadors for Christ, to be heirs with Christ. And so, you know, I'm not, you know, in a way it's like, yes, we kind of use this term Christian libertarian, but I don't really look at it that way in a sense of like, I'm not wearing two different hats. I'm not a Christian who is also a libertarian. It's more like I am a Christian, and I think a consequence of that, because I'm trying to take what the Bible teaches about government and authority and kingdoms and spirituality and morality, and take all these things and take them consistently, and to have the, you know, have the fact that Christ is Lord be something that is true in all areas of my life. In many ways, that deeper commitment to my faith came after I became a libertarian. So it's kind of like a chicken, egg, and then chicken sort of thing.
Kara, how about
you?
You were
nodding
your head.
I've never really thought much. Well, yeah, I agree a lot with what he said. And like, I've heard him talk about this, and we've talked about it before. And the main thing is that, and I think Jacob and I both agree with this, is that libertarianism is like kind of the logical like conclusion, in our opinion, when you, you know, follow the Bible and what Jesus taught us. And I think, you know, I used to never think that political views and your religion had anything to do with each other. And that is something that's changed, for me later in life as a libertarian, where I do think that they do have something to do with each other. I don't think you could just, you know, believe anything politically and it's just coalesces with Christianity. So I do think they like go hand in hand in a sense. But I would definitely Christianity first, and it is the foundation for everything for me from which all my other things flow. So I would say, like, to answer the question, that is first, and then the libertarianism was the natural consequence of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you guys. I've been, it was over a year ago. I did RCIA, joined my local Catholic church, deepened my faith. I was always Christian. I was always involved in the church. But this past couple of years have sort of, I've gotten deeper in my faith, but also at the same time, like I picked up this book called Anatomy of the State, and I started going down this rabbit hole, and I was like, who's this Murray Rothbard guy? And I started to read more Murray Rothbard, and then I started to read like For a New Liberty. And then I started to read, every time I say Anatomy of the State, I tell my listeners, it's a must read. Just go read it. It's like 75 pages. It's not that long. And so not like they weren't, they were just coinciding together, like going together. And it was like, the more I deepened my faith, it was like, and I was reading more about libertarianism, I was like, huh, these actually work out better as I was trying to like coalesce them. So it was interesting when I found you guys and I was like, oh, there's actually a Christian caucus dedicated to this. So let's get into the nitty gritty, because I, you know, people have a lot of misconceptions about what libertarians stand for. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who, when they hear the terms libertarian and Christian together, they're probably like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? So let's just dive right in. Let's just get into the nitty gritty. So someone hears the term libertarian, they think, well, libertarians are those goofy people who believe, you know, weed is and all drugs should be legal, prostitution should be legal. So how can you be a Christian if you support people being engaged in prostitution and doing drugs and stuff like that? So I guess I'll throw that first one out there. So like, how do you coincide, for our listeners who are wondering, how do these two philosophies coincide with each other and how do they actually work?
I just want to say that was literally my exact question. So
I'm sorry, Camille. Yeah. It shows we've been doing a podcast together for a while.
Yeah. Well, I think the way I like to approach it is that in sort of the same vein of the answer I gave to the first question, you know, if we as Christians do need to start out with our fundamentals, which is recognizing Christ as our King, as well as our Savior and our Lord, and figuring out what that means for us in our lives, and then figuring out what that means in terms of, and then what we advocate for in terms of, you know, the kind of society that we want to live in. Libertarianism, I think, and there's a lot of different ways to define it, libertarianism, I think, is most appropriately defined in terms of answering the question of when is the legitimate or appropriate use of force allowed in sort of the civil sense, right? Like, when are we allowed to use force? And the libertarian answer is, you are not allowed to use force in terms of initiating aggression against others. The only legitimate use of force is in response to someone who's already initiated, meaning, you know, in like self-defense or in pursuit of justice in terms of after someone's rights have been violated. And I think that lines up perfectly with what Christianity teaches. And the reason why these things coalesce is because, again, I think what Christianity has to teach, what the scripture has to teach about these different areas of life, they do require us to have a worldview that isn't like compartmentalized in a way where we're a Christian in these areas, then we think that our Christian faith doesn't have anything to say in these other areas. And I think there's a lot of Christians who, unfortunately, in today's culture, like maybe here, like in the West, especially in America, they tend to fall into two camps. They fall into the camp of either they don't care about politics, or they do, but they think that the right way to care about politics is that Christians need to basically take hold of the civil magistrate and use it to usher in their Christian values and preferences and force them upon the population. And what we're saying is, no, actually, if we look at the example of Jesus Christ and we look at what he taught, he didn't teach or model himself the use of political power to achieve our end. Rather, Jesus sort of subverted that expectation, because that's what the Jews of the time were looking for in the Messiah. They wanted someone to come and lead them in a political revolution to free them from Roman persecution. But Jesus instead subverted that expectation. And when he came to, you know, like Mark, the Gospel of Mark starts out with you know, John the Baptist and Jesus basically proclaiming that the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, is at hand. But then when Jesus goes on in the Gospels to define the kingdom of God, it's not this earthly kingdom. Rather, it is a spiritual kingdom that is based on making, the way Christ describes it is that, you know, if you want to be greatest in the kingdom of heaven, you must become the least and become a servant to all, just as the Son of Man has come down not to be served, but to serve and to be poured out as a ransom for many. And we're to model that. And so I think that's really the connection there, is that if we are going to live, you know, as Christians, right, if we're going to be followers of Christ and we're going to imitate Christ, his character, his values, and what he says is normative, then we ought not to seek to use coercion or force to try to get people to do what we want. The only legitimate use of force is in self-defense or in response to people's rights being violated. And then everything else is just a matter of us going out there being salt and light in the world. I think that's the role of the church. We're not to be rulers of men. We're to be fishers of men. And so that's what the Great Commission is. It's not to go out there and wield the power of the sword in pursuit of the gospel, because those things are actually antithetical. Rather, we are to go out there and, you know, sort of engage in the free market, right? Engage in voluntary interactions with people and to be servants to the world, right? We're to, you know, bring people to Christ, bring people to the cross, not through the sword, but through being servants to all.
Yeah. Can I add, on a little bit to speaking to the whole misconception thing. So I run into this a lot. So for example, when I told the woman at my old church in Oceanside that I had started the political action ministry with her, she's like a little older than me, like in her 50s. And I was like, you know, I joined the Libertarian Party. And she's just like, she looked like I killed her puppy. She just couldn't believe it, you know? She said, oh, Kara, like, but I wanted you to run for school board and I was going to get the Republican women all behind you. And she's like, I don't know. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, this is just what I feel like is right. And, you know, I tell a lot of Christians, the first thing they talk about is abortion and the abortion, you know, thing. Like, well, they don't libertarians support abortion. And, you know, actually, just to like clear the air on that one right away, that we don't have any reference to abortion anymore in our platform. It was completely, that plank was completely deleted, because of course we need room for the people that say that abortion violates the non-aggression principle and therefore it's not compatible with libertarianism, because there is a lot of us that believe life starts at conception, and there is varying degrees of how we think we should deal with that, whether it's through you know, lessening the state's propping up of abortion services. Some people think there should be laws and they're still libertarian, because, you know, the argument for those people that are more like minarchists, not anarchists, would be, would you like let murder be legal and just hope that, you know, and then just have no legal consequence for it? So there is people within the Libertarian Party that are definitely pro-life, for example, and some believe there should even be a law about it. And then others prefer the more, you know, cultural shift and voluntary means of changing that. And then another thing that comes to mind, and I don't know if I'm using this word right, but I've heard the word libertine. I don't know if Jacob maybe knows that word, like people that kind of like, they find their home in the Libertarian Party because they just want to do whatever they want, kind of like nihilistic. Mm. They want to find a place where they're accepted. Now, the thing is, when we say, like, especially like Jacob and I, if we want sex work to be able to not have laws against it, it's not because we promote it or anything like drugs. Like we don't think drugs are good. We don't think sex work is work. It's prostitution and it's like a moral abomination, terrible for society and families and everything else, like pornography. But we just think that perhaps the state is not the best way to go about that, because then they start overreaching into other things. And, you know, there's just no stopping it. I mean, Anatomy of the State, I've never read it. I'm like, sorry. But I think one of the metaphors is how it's like this thing that keeps growing and growing and growing. Is that right? Or is that a different book that I'm thinking of? But it's like this Leviathan that just keeps consuming and growing. And that's why we don't want to give it any power, even if it's over something we morally think isn't good. And of course, aside from whether it technically has a law or not alongside it, we would never, especially as Christians, we don't promote any of that stuff. So just because we think the state should be out of something definitely doesn't mean we think that we think it's cool and awesome or okay. And there are a lot of libertarians that feel the same way as us about it. And that's, you know, and those misconceptions are another major reason why this caucus is so important for our party, because I used to have those misconceptions. Well, I think our party has actually become more hospitable actually to Christians than it was maybe in the semi-recent past. But this, it's really important for people to know, like, you know, there is a place for Christians in the Libertarian Party, and it is compatible, and like to get rid of some of those misconceptions. So,
yeah. Like, I've had on my podcast people from the Libertarian Party who have, there's actually another caucus that's called the Sober Caucus. And it's actually a caucus that promotes, although they promote the libertarian position of opposing the drug war, they're actually alongside like us in terms of promoting a sort of culture change within libertarian spaces and the Libertarian Party, to say, like, you know, maybe we don't think this stuff should be illegal, but that doesn't mean that we should be promoting it. Rather, what we should be promoting is helping people to get clean and promoting free market solutions to drug addiction and drug abuse and things like that. And really, it just comes down to, you know, libertarian positions on things like the drug war aren't about celebrating drug use. They just come down to, is the laws that are being talked about and the agencies being created to combat these problems, are they solving problems or are they making problems worse? And, you know, I think when it comes to the drug war, there's really no metric of analysis that would say that it's been anything other than a complete catastrophe. Because it's only, I mean, drug use continues to increase, the drug cartels continue to increase in power, and we just see more people flooding into the prison industrial complex. And we have the world's, you know, here in America, we have the world's largest prison population, and it's filled with mostly nonviolent drug offenders. You know, as a Christian, I don't celebrate drug use. However, kind of like what I was saying before, people who are addicted to drugs or who are using substances in a way that I would find to be immoral and incompatible with what the Bible, more like someone with a gun forcing them in a cage, or do they need services that are better offered by, you know, medical facilities or by churches or things that the free market can handle in terms of giving them ways out of that? And so that's really what the conversation needs to be about. And I find that not only is it compatible with Christianity, again, I think this is actually the correct Christian response to things like the drug crisis going on here in America.
The retort to it from a lot of conservatives or Republicans, if you say, well, you know, if you're a libertarian and Christian, they say, well, then society's just going to fall into mass chaos. It's just going to fall into shambles. We're just going to degrade as a society. And I guess my counterpoint to that always is, well, what's your solution? And inevitably, it becomes this solution of, well, the state will then put out policies and laws to regulate morality based on what they believe is moral. And to me, that kind of comes off as like a pseudo-theocratic kind of way of governing, where, okay, so you're going to use the power of the state to force your morality on other people. What's not to say that the state can't turn around when somebody else is in power and then all of a sudden force their morality on people, and which we're seeing today.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening right now. Like the left has taken control of all of these institutions that, you know, decades ago, the right and the sort of like evangelical Judeo-Christian majority had a monopoly over. And so it's not that I'm a fan of the left winning the culture war and using the state to cram certain beliefs and lifestyles and you know, sort of like anti-Christian mindsets into our schools and into the media and things like that. Like, I'm not for that. But, you know, in the same way that like libertarians in foreign policy will talk about blowback of government interventions in other areas, kind of like how, you know, things like 9/11 were, you know, kind of like not justified, but were foreseeable. It was like foreseeable blowback for America being involved in regime change and occupation in the Middle East for decades. Well, what's going on right now is sort of a left wing blowback in the culture war, where it's like, well, yeah, like, you know, right wing Christians using the state to force certain things down from the state down into the culture that was eventually going to lead to a, you know, a reactionary claim from the left to do the same thing back. And now you see the right is trying to, you know, just, well, let's just try it again. Maybe this time it'll work. But let's look back through history. Has that ever worked? Not only has it not worked in terms of like just, you know, modern history or what is documented history, but we can even look as Christians to biblical history and see that this hasn't worked. I mean, if it didn't work with God making a specific covenant with the people of Israel and giving them a law that he himself constructed and gave to them, and even God in this covenant with this group of people giving them laws that he constructed couldn't make them adhere to the laws, well, then how, like, how are we going to say that we're going to be able to do better than God to do that on any kind of scale? I mean, it'd be one thing if it was just about, well, it's just, you know, I think the right response is, well, we need to obviously lead people towards righteousness. But again, I think we need to lead people in the way Christ led people. And, you know, Christ would speak against people's sinful lifestyles, but he wouldn't do it while pointing a gun at them or holding a sword at their throat. So that's something we need to think about, you know, something that Rothbard talks about in The Anatomy of the State and something libertarians talk about that Christians need to understand is that anytime we pass a law is just an opinion backed by a gun. That's all it is at the end of the day. Otherwise, it's just words on paper. The only thing that makes a law different from me typing something out on my keyboard and saying people listen to me is that what compels people to listen to that is the threat of violence. And so we have to ask ourselves, okay, we might not like this thing, but are we willing to hold people, you know, hold guns to people's heads to make them do what we want? And I think that someone who is trying to follow after Christ should find themselves convicted that maybe that's not the way we're supposed to engage with the world.
I have a comment. We were talking about the book that you have, Jacob, in the corner, the Faith Seeking Freedom book, which I picked up and started reading a few weeks ago. That had nothing to do with actually tonight's podcast. So full disclosure, I'm a registered Republican. And that doesn't mean that I think that the Republican Party is perfect. And in fact, that's kind of why I started reading more stuff on the Libertarian Party. And I have to say, reading that book, I'm not completely finished it with yet, but I started thinking actually about my Christian Democrat friends. And I think that if they were to go and do a little bit of research, they would find they are actually libertarian and not Democrat at all.
Well, I mean, you're speaking to someone, me personally, who used to be a Democrat. I mean, I was raised in a conservative Republican household, but because I was, you know, I mean, I learned early on a lot of things that pushed me into the left. I learned about sort of the American role in the Middle East and things that had happened there, which, you know, made me kind of adopt a sort of like anti-war, anti-interventionist position. And I opposed the drug war for kind of similar reasons I do today. I just didn't understand economics. And so I kind of, you know, back then you were either a Ron Paul libertarian, if you had my position on war and drugs, or you'd find yourself on the left. And so I was kind of a, you know, more left wing kind of Bernie Sanders type Democrat. But after 2016, when Trump got elected and the left just kind of decided to abandon the only principles they had in terms of being anti-war and anti-war on drugs, and instead double and triple down on identity politics and the culture war, they kind of lost me. And then once I kind of understood economics through discovering like Mises and Rothbard and the Austrian school of economics and whatnot, that sort of pushed me fully into, you know, libertarianism in terms of a political philosophy. But yeah, there's a lot of Christian progressives and people who are more like left-wing Christians who to this day I would say that they a lot of their intuitions are correct. And I think the only things that they're getting wrong are kind of like the economic side of things, because though I do think it, you know, in hindsight, I can recognize that I also made this mistake, but it is kind of weird to be like, oh, we are going to criticize the state for throwing people in cages and, you know, bombing people halfway across the world and, you know, doing all these evil things, but we want them to run our healthcare.
Mm.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, that doesn't quite make a lot of sense when you think about it. Like, we think that, you know, it's like these people are evil, horrible monsters on these issues, but they're going to be benevolent, gentle saviors on this other. Like, no, not really. The same corruptive incentives are going to come into play there, no matter where we apply that power. So, but yeah, there's a lot of overlap where I think that you know, sometimes I think some Christians think that the left wing types have a lot wrong. I find that they have a lot right in terms of their intuitions, and I hope if they were to read a book like Faith Seeking Freedom, that they would see that I think their main hesitation happens to be with the free market, which I think actually is something that God has created to be a normative way of which we solve problems in the world, and not through the state. Actually, it's funny, like one of my favorite Bible passages is in the book of 1 Samuel in chapter 8. And people forget that Israel used to exist without a state, because before 1 Samuel 8, so like the book of Judges, and then the first seven chapters of 1 Samuel, Israel lived in a decentralized confederacy that was almost, you know, like a libertarian anarchistic theocracy in a sense, where they had judges who would rise up in certain areas to help settle disputes, but there was no king in the land. There was no centralized ruler. So they lived in a very decentralized fashion, but they got tired of that. And in 1 Samuel 8, they go to Samuel and they say, give us a king so we can be like the other nations, and he'll solve all our problems and he'll fight all our battles for us. And God says two things to Samuel. He says, one, they're not rejecting you. They are rejecting me, God, as their king in doing this, just as they have always turned away from me and worshiped, you know, idols and golden calves and things like that. And then he says, two, give them what they want, but warn them of the consequences. He says that this king is going to take your property. He's going to take your children and make your children work for him, and work his fields to create his harvests. He says your children are going to serve on the front lines of his wars and go before his chariots. And then he ends it by saying, you will be his slaves. Mm-hmm. And on that day, you will cry out because of this king that you have asked for, but I will not answer you on this day. So, again, I think it's not that we're some people sometimes think before they look into this that Christian libertarianism is this like weird, like we're trying to shove a square peg into a round hole. And I'm like, no, it's a round peg into a round hole. These things actually are just mirrors of each other. And the rejection of state power, the rejection of the idea of using the sword to solve our problems, is actually just baked into the biblical narrative.
Yeah, you know, Camille, what you were saying, I think a lot of the Christian, you know, not all of the, so there's some crazy Christians too, but some of the Christian Democrats, they definitely have good impulses, you know, like they want everybody to have a living wage, and they want, you know, all these things that are like good things, but they just have the wrong idea of how to go about it. Like the ones that do have that good impulse, it's like, they do just need education. There's some libertarians that swear everybody's a libertarian, they just don't know it. And then there's other libertarians that think that's crazy. And there's only a few of us, and that's it. So I don't know. I'm a little bit more hopeful. And I think you're right. I think on both the right and the left, there's people that just haven't fully realized it yet. Because I think some people just haven't thought it through that much, especially some Republicans and Democrats have. But because it's just such the default duopoly, you know, it's just like there's a lot of people. I mean, I was one of them bumbling around through the duopoly their whole life and just kind of voting, you know, whoever is kind of down the line, R or D. So I think a lot of people haven't thought it through enough yet. And then there is other people, I think, that do. There was like a really good tweet I just saw the other day. And it was like, it's really going to be hard to achieve liberty when most people want freedom from responsibility rather than freedom from coercion. Mm. And I thought that was spot on, because those people were not going to convince them to be libertarians because they don't want to be responsible.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course, that is one other thing. Let me clear up really fast is we're not. Some people think we're heartless and, you know, we think everybody, every man for themselves, but that is not true at all. We want communities and family to replace the state. And we just want to approach taking care of these societal problems in that fashion rather than try to have this like cold-hearted state trying to have more power and do those things, because it just makes everything worse. The more it tries to address one problem, 10 more problems come up, and that problem they're addressing gets worse, like the drug war.
Yeah, actually, I went to before the church I would go to right now, it was a very, very, very progressive left-leaning church here in San Diego, Methodist Church. Not going to name them, but they were very, very progressive. Great people, though. They were the nicest people. That's why I went, because the people were great. I loved going to the church there. Everyone was really great. But like you're saying, Kara, like a lot of these, the whole church was basically vote for a bigger state. We want universal health care. We want a living wage. We want the state to take care of all these problems. Like that was their whole thing. Like, you know, that's our belief, is that if we just had a big socialist state, everything would be fantastic. It just seems so, I guess, misguided as Christians, because to me, and I think it was Chad Jackson who had one of the greatest responses to somebody who said, well, aren't you Christian? Don't you believe that the government should provide these services? And Chad Jackson, I believe, replied, as a true Christian, I wouldn't delegate my duty as a Christian to take care of people to the state. And true Christians don't do that. And I think that's something a lot of people think about with libertarians, of, oh, well, you just want everyone to fend for themselves and everyone will just, you know, the poor will suffer and no one's going to be there to help them, which is not true at all. Because if you look at the amount of charity support that a lot of these communities provide through volunteerism, I think if there were more resources, because you don't have a state or the state, you know, leaning on you so much, and there were more resources for these nonprofits and charities,
and getting they would, out of the they way would be of even, them to do their thing.
Exactly. They would like,
how much better would people be off if they weren't just being taxed to death or having their savings and their income be completely destroyed by inflation?
Right.
I mean, because that's the other thing. I mean, it's like, listen, I mean, the poor will always be among you, right? Like, so there's always, yes, I agree with everything that you were saying, that we should not be delegating what Jesus has told us to do to the state, right? I mean, Jesus didn't say, that which you voted for the state to do to the least of these, you've done unto me. He said, no, what you have done to the least of these, you have done unto me. It's our duty as Christians, as individuals, and as the church to go out there and to, again, like I said earlier, to be, you know, servants to the world, just as Christ was. Mm-hmm. You know, so you serve people by washing their feet, not by compelling people with force, and that's all the government is, like I explained earlier. But then to the other point, in terms of, you know, are we going to are any of these policies actually going to have their intended effect? Well, like Kara said earlier, not really. Actually, we see things like government welfare programs don't actually do anything but increase poverty and perpetuate it and make a permanent class of people who are stuck in it, are backed by taxation, or they're backed by the Federal Reserve printing money to keep up with all the programs that, you know, that our government has created and has to fund. And so then we're making people worse off, and we're shrinking the middle class to the point where it won't exist soon, because people, again, they're either having their, I mean, you know, the amount of money I lose I make a decent living, right? But I'd be doing a lot better if the tax money that the government, you know, automatically withdraws from my paycheck every 2 weeks, I was allowed to keep. Actually, I'd be doing so well that I'd have extra to give away to other people. And mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, some you know, Joe Schmo working a middle-class job. So that's true for all people. And then also, just, I mean, think about how much, you know, purchasing power is an important thing. You know, because people can, we can throw money at a problem, but if we're throwing money at people, you know, and we, as we're throwing money at people, the amount of things they can purchase with that money is decreasing. Well, that's not a solution either. So, you know, and then that's a problem with the progressive mentality. And, you know, the Christian left misses this. Unfortunately, I can't even say the Christian right gets this good, because often, and the reason I'm a libertarian and not a Republican is because although there are good Republicans out there, you know, I love people like Thomas Massey. I love Rand Paul. There's a lot of great libertarian-minded Republicans in local positions all across the country. So I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. But the GOP, in terms of like its national, the majority of the GOP voting blocs do in Washington, they're really just progressives driving the speed limit. They're not actually advocating for a rollback of this progressive machine. Like, we're not having an argument of Democrats arguing for progressive policies on one side and Republicans saying, no, we need to go back to free markets. No, it's progressives saying we need a 60% corporate income tax, and Republicans saying, no, we just need a 35% corporate income tax. It's like, no, abolish the income tax. What are you talking? There shouldn't be a corporate income tax. There shouldn't be an individual income tax. It's like, so that's why I'm a libertarian, because they're the ones actually advocating for the free market policies in that discussion.
Kyra, I didn't know if you were going to say something. Look, you're about to jump in and say something.
I don't know if it's like really super relevant to the conversation, but for some reason it just reminded me, there's this Democrat in San Diego that is, I think he's about to run for his like city council or something. And he's like, cool, you know, like he genuinely wants to, he's really young and he's like trying to like talk to people and he wants to like do what's good, but he's definitely a Democrat. And like one of his tweets the other day was something like, you know, if I get in there, I'm not going to raise taxes. Like, we have too many taxes. And I'm like, okay, well, that's great. And then I keep reading. He's like, but I know we have a revenue problem. And I'm like, no, we have a spending problem.
We have
Stop
a spending
about
problem.
Revenue.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry. That just came into my mind. Like when you were talking about that, cause it's just like, God, the politicians, they want to talk about like investing. I'm like, investing? What do you like? Is money falling out of the sky? What do you mean? Like, you mean you're going to steal taxpayer dollars and decide what to do with it? The money you stole from us? It's insane. It's just the whole mindset is so contorted. And it's hard because like, it's like you grow up in this, like, that's just the way it is. And people talk about the social contract and like, we just live in this world and we pay taxes. The one thing that's for sure, death and taxes. And, you know, people just accept it. And it's like, you have to go through this like awakening to realize like, oh, wait, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be like that. Maybe there's another way. Maybe it isn't about the government deciding what's best for all of us and, you know, taking more and more, having revenue stream problems. Wait, they're not a freaking business, man. What is going on?
It's like all parties have a gambling problem. Like they're like, okay, well, just if I just spend another $10, I'll win it all back, you know? And like, it's not even your money. Yeah. You're messing around with all our money. Stop.
Yeah. Like my dad used to always say, if they were a business, they would have gone out of business already. Like a long time.
Well, that's why the government is so bad. That's why the government is so bad at everything it does, is because it's not a free market entity. Like free market entities have to earn every dollar they get. They have to convince people to give them money. The government doesn't have to convince people. It's they get their money through coercion or because they have a monopoly over the money supply and they can just decide on a whim to print more. But either way, they're using coercion to get their funds. And so they are not subject to actual free market pressures that actually make the free market work, right? You know, because you have to earn
the
money you're getting and you have to compete and you have to, because you have to earn the money that you're getting and you have to compete with others in the marketplace, you're incentivized to not to be efficient, right? You know, but also to provide a good product. And so this is what, you know, this is how the free market has generated all of the amazing innovations that make our lives better, you know, in 21st century America and in the West, and even a lot of the second and third world is, you know, we see poverty largely being diminished to a large degree because of these innovations. And so really all libertarians are talking about when we're talking about decentralizing government is that, hey, what if, because like, listen, I think there's a legitimate role for people, civil disputes, like we need that, but should that be monopolized in a system of coercion that is built upon violating property rights? It's like, hey, we have a problem of some people like to predate on other people and violate their property rights. So here's my solution. I'm going to create this big institution that's based on that's entire foundation is just one giant violation of property rights to arbitrate the other violations of property rights. It's like, what? I mean, this is a lot of what Rothbard talks about in Anatomy of the State. It's like, you know, we need to adjudicate disputes and we need to pursue justice, right? And so, you know, property rights are important and those need to be protected. But the beauty of libertarianism is that, you know what, we don't need large centralized power to figure these things out. We can have a decentralized approach, and government officials, you know, listen, the Christian morality, connected back to our Christian principles, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, right? Do not bear false witness. These commands are not put in the Bible with a little asterisk next to them that says, oh, unless you're a king. Oh, unless you're unless you have a badge that says sheriff or cop, or unless you're an elected congressman, right? Or unless you're a general. No, like these things are wrong no matter who you are, no matter what kind of dressing or clothing you try to put on it or fancy terminology you try to hide it behind. Coercion is still coercion. Lying is still lying. And so the Christian position, which coincides with the libertarian position here, is, you know what, if you want to protect people, if you want to be a public servant and help solve, you know, be a third party arbiter for property disputes, or you want to, you know, work in like security and protect people, those are all noble goals, but you have to be held to the same rules that you're trying to administer. Mm-hmm. That's really the entire Christian libertarian case summarized there, I think.
Going back to the budget, first, there's two ways to fix budgetary problems. You can do both sides of the ledgers. You can fix spending or revenue, but most politicians don't understand it. Like Alex Lee tweeted something about, well, I am introducing a bill to tax billionaires in California even more than they're already taxed. And,
let's see how many more we can chase out.
Let's see how many more rich people we can chase out of California. And, you know, going back to the point of like, the state is just a bad way to allocate resources. I mean, California taxes everyone to death, and look at us, we're in a $68 billion deficit. So they don't know how to allocate resources. However, I've always found that the nonprofits that do try and help societal issues, like one good example is here in San Diego's Father Joe's Village, which serves how many meals to the homeless, gives beds to the homeless, to the point where they've actually raised enough money. I think they're building an apartment complex to help the homeless. And this is a nonprofit. And like Jacob said, the free market solution is we are voting for the nonprofit that is helping society the best. And they have to convince us that we're doing the best job. And as Christians, we can kind of look around and go, okay, maybe you go with a faith-based nonprofit, one that works with my church, one, and we can figure out, okay, maybe I can volunteer, maybe I can give money. And so you can get involved, and you are either, you are voting with your dollars and your time and your effort to support those institutions, as opposed to being coerced by the government that goes, give us your money, we know how to spend it, we'll solve homelessness. And then a year later, they're like, okay, sorry, we're in $1 billion deficit or a $68 billion deficit.
Then they want more money to create a task force to investigate
right.
what's going yeah, exactly. on with all their plans.
Well,
that they
it's
trying
so
to
silly.
Implement.
It's like compare this. So listen, I'm in the automotive repair field. So like, let's compare what you just described to like if you were going to conceive of something like this happening in a free market interaction. Like, imagine you came to me and said, my transmission's not working. It's slipping in second gear. I said, all right, drop it off with me. Leave it with me for a few days. You know, I diagnosed it. I said, all right, it's going to be about $2,000. By the way, I already took the money. I hope that's okay with you. And all right, it's fixed. Here you go. You pick it up and drive it to go. No, it's still slipping into second. Now it's also slipping into third. And I take it back and go, okay, well, I'm going to have to charge you $1,000 and investigate how I didn't fix it in the first place. And I already took that. You didn't have any say in it. So I took your $1,000. Oh, I found out that actually the problem's worse than what I initially thought. So now we need a new transmission and just a new engine just to be safe. That's going to be $8,000. Oh, I already took that from you as well. Like, this is like, that is how government operates. And people might say, oh, we have a say in it because of democracy and because we vote. But I mean, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. So, yeah, we vote for representatives, but those representatives don't represent us. They're not coming back and checking with their constituents. They're checking with their donors. They're checking with their party leaders and stuff. And they're voting, you know, minus like two or three dissenters. People vote across party lines, and people vote based upon what their financial backers are telling them to vote for. And especially when it comes to spending, I mean, and especially when it comes to spending on things like war and other things, that's where both sides tend to agree.
I just want to correct your scenario. Problem. Sorry, I need to correct your scenario, because a year or two later, they still wouldn't have the transmission replaced.
Right, exactly. Right, and it's like, and they just keeps going on. You're like, but that wouldn't happen in a normal situation. Like the first time it doesn't get fixed, you're like, well, I'm not paying for this because it's not fixed. Mm-hmm. That's not the way that government operates, though.
Can I just share something that is kind of along the lines of this that happened recently locally? A couple of years ago, when I was still in Oceanside at my church there, we had a local city council member from Oceanside come and talk to us. And one of the big problems since COVID, especially in Oceanside, has been homelessness. And just the streets are just full of encampments, and people like want these encampments gone. And there's just people like stealing bikes. I mean, I know that's like kind of a weird thing, but it was like all the bikes were getting stolen, and like, you know, people are getting people coming up to their houses in the middle of the night, and there's this huge problem. And he really broke down in a really good way what the best solutions would be, and how like Housing First doesn't work because, you know, people just go in there and just start using, and, you know, it's just like some people end up killing themselves because it's just like a free place to go in and use their drugs. And people started asking him, like, why aren't people going for this other route that seems like more effective, where people have to like go into treatment when they're, you know, when they're arrested or when they're on the street and they refuse to like vacate that spot they're not allowed to be. And he said something that was the first time I'd ever heard that. He goes, there is a lot of money that a lot of people make And so there's a lot of forces at play. And I just never had even considered before that homelessness was a problem that people are just profiting off of. And they don't really, they're not really there to solve it. People are there to make money. And like, it's the famous OPM, other people's money. So there's a lot less accountability for how it's being spent. And it's just like constant, you know, government contracts, just throwing them out. So they do enough to limp these problems along. And it's just, it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, that's the incentive structure, right? Like in a business, you can't get away with that. But if you have the ability to just take people's money by force, then yeah, you wouldn't be incentivized to fix the problem. You'd be incentivized to keep the problem going or even make it worse so that you can keep taking people's money. Right. that's the whole problem with the dynamic of the state and its ability to we're going to protect property rights by violating property rights. it's a non sequitur.
So we got a couple minutes left. I want to be cognizant of Jacob's time because he's up in, what is it, Wednesday morning at this point where he is.
Final tomorrow where I'm at.
it's already the next day. He's already one day closer to Christmas. So final thoughts from both of you in terms of any Christian who's listening right now who might be tired with being either Democrat or Republican or you know, maybe give the Christian caucus a look. Like, what would you say to those Christians who are tuning in? Where could they find more resources and get started and going down the rabbit hole of self-discovery?
You want to go?
Yeah. So, Kara, do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go.
All right. Yeah. So listen, I mean, if what we're saying here piques your interest, makes sense to you and you want to find out more, I mean, you can find us on Twitter. I don't know our exact Twitter handle offhand. I think it's like LP
Christ Caucus.
LP Christ Caucus, yep. Mm-hmm. You can follow me at Biblical Anarchy as well on Twitter. And reach out to us. We'd love to talk with you. You know, listen, I mean I think it's clear that, you know, every election, right, every 4 years becomes the most important election of our lifetime. And I think a lot of people and a lot of Christians are starting to get a sense that this is really just a lot of theater and a lot of people at the top making a spectacle. But at the end of the day, nothing gets solved by either side. And so no matter where you're coming from, right, if you're coming from, you know, left of center, right of center, or you're just politically homeless and you've always been that way, and what we're saying makes sense. I mean, you know, we're committed, like we said at the onset, right? We want to be a group of Christians who are coalitioning together towards a lot of different ends, right? We're looking first and foremost. I think what Kara and I and the founders agree on is that our primary objective isn't even political. It's to be servants to Christ and to His kingdom first and foremost. And everything we do, we hope that we're doing it in a way that gives glory to Him, and that we're doing things that He is calling us to do. But you know, some people feel that, you know, God calls them into these arena and to fight certain battles in these public spheres. And so if that's you, and you know, whether it's issues like abortion, whether it's issues like health freedom, if it's issues like homeschooling and having the right as parents to educate your children the way you want to educate them, if it's, you know, fearing another, you know, lockdown over people trying to scare people with different pandemics and things like that, whether it's war, there's so many issues. We have like a 10-point platform that we've constructed with the different issues that we focus on, that I've kind of gone through most of them there. But you know, if these are things that you feel convicted of, that you don't like the way things are in our society, and you want to work with other Christians towards trying to advocate for solutions to these problems, you know, we would love to work with you. And that's what the Christian Caucus is all about. It's about bringing glory to God and bringing Christians together to find ways to work together and also to work with other people and other groups in these different spheres to try to affect change. You know, we believe in issue coalitions, and so we have, you know, and Kara can get into more details about this. We have several projects in the works where we're going to be partnering with other groups that are already in the sort of like political and libertarian spheres to try to, you know, start making some noise and get people working together, whether it's phone baking, whether it's, you know, attending certain events or rallies, whether it's trying to get people to, you know, push certain legislation. There's so many ways in which we can work together to put pressure on public officials to try to start make meaningful change, and also to move the Overton window and to really put the message of the gospel and the message of peace and of freedom into the public square so that people can hear it and more people can be woken up to that truth. Because I think that's also the long-term goal, is to just reach more people with these ideas and these and this message, because that you know, ideas are what drive culture, and the more people come to believe in certain ideas, the more we see those ideas take root. And I'll end on this. This is something that Ron Paul used to say, and I love. He said, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than an idea that's, I'm forgetting the exact wording, like nothing more dangerous than an idea that day has come, essentially. And I think for a lot of people on a lot of these issues that I've raised, these ideas are reaching ahead where people are starting to realize the truth. And these ideas day is closer to coming than we may think. And we can work towards accomplishing those.
Yeah. So I have like two little things that I'll just kind of like end with to address like the hypothetical people that Phil's talking about. One of the things that was slowing me down from joining the Libertarian Party at first was kind of just like that fear of leaving where I felt like my only chance to make an impact was, which is one of the two major parties. And I remember getting like pushed back about that, like, well, your vote won't even matter. And then, you know, I just was like, well, as a Republican, does my vote even matter in California? So, and also it's just, I don't know, I got to this point, whatever you think about how much your vote is going to impact an election, you know, depending on what party you're in. Besides that, I've just got to a point, I think COVID pushed a lot of people to come to these kind of like existential, you know, points in their life. And I just go, do I just want to be trapped somewhere where I don't really feel like I belong politically? Or do I want to like follow where I really believe I should be and where I like, you know what I mean? Where I find value and where I find the work that I should be doing is. And so I think if, you know, you're one of those people that just feels like, you know, everything makes sense, but you're like, oh, you know, well, that's the problem. Everybody's scared to leave the duopoly. That's like, we need people to stop being afraid to leave. So I am dedicated to not going back ever. And I'm not going to live that way. I'm not going to live by like somebody else's, you know, standard. You got to be a Republican or Democrat. No, I'm not either one of those. So I'm not going to be, no matter if, you know, it like someone tells me I'm throwing a vote to the other team by not voting for, you know, the better of two evils. No, I'm going to vote for and, you know, put my political, you know, willpower behind what I believe in. And then the other thing is, if you're not fully into what we're saying and doing and you're listening, but you can ascertain that there's a couple things that we totally line up on. Jacob kind of mentioned, we're totally into issue coalitions. So with single issue coalitions, it doesn't mean you have to compromise anything else. It's just, we come together on one thing, no matter what you believe about other things. If there's something that we line up on, like, you know, there's power in numbers, and we will line up with anybody on issues that we line up on, and we can just leave the other stuff alone. Right now, we're kind of like gearing up to address flooding the committee members with calls where that defund Planned Parenthood, it's really just a moratorium on the funding, has been in committee for almost a year. So for the 1-year anniversary, we are working on getting people all together to do that. So that's something we're going to do. So if anybody that's like feeling, you know, like they don't want government funding going to Planned Parenthood or your pro-life or both, then, you know, hit us up and join us in that effort. Another thing is I would like to plug really quick, the Mises Caucus has been pushing really hard to defend the guard legislation in every state. So that just has to do with, you know, bringing our troops home from these endless wars, not letting, you know, not letting them go to war when there's not even a constitutionally declared war, making Congress take its powers back. So it's kind of like just a way we can take a small step towards bringing troops home. That's like the main goal of that. And right now, especially in California, I know they need someone to sponsor the bill. And since this is a California-based podcast, I'll just throw it out there. Like if anybody, you know, feels so inclined to like look it up and then start hitting up legislators, we got to like find someone that would be willing to sponsor that bill. But if you want to check out that, it's defendtheguard.us. And if you go to defendtheguard.us/phonebank, you can get on an email list to help phone banking for that legislation. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Those are a couple of things we're working on right now.
Yeah. And if I could just put one more thing out there, because what Kara said brought to mind, people are struggling with, you know, I feel like I could vote for one side or the other because maybe I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, but man, like this one side's so bad. I just feel like I have to vote for this other one because they're just not as bad. And listen, that might even be true, right? Like maybe you're right. Maybe one side is worse than the other. But is that like, if you're a Christian, right? We should be convicted by what the Bible says. And I'll end on this passage here, which I think really instructs what I think Kara and I are getting at. It's the end of Romans 12, starting in verse 17. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. And this last part is the most important. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It doesn't say overcome evil with the lesser evil. Evil cannot drive out evil. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. The only thing that can drive out darkness is light. And as we know from the Bible, as it says, like in the Gospel of John, it starts out, the light that shines in the darkness is Jesus Christ. He is the Word. He is the truth. That is what we have to rest on. That's what we have to advocate. So no matter what we do, we cannot advocate for lesser evils, whether they're ideas or politicians or political parties, to try to bring our country, bring our society towards a better place. We have to, you know, even if we're in a position, we're in the minority, and it feels like, man, how are we going to make a difference? Jesus had a ragtag group of, you know, a few hundred people, and through what they did, they changed the landscape of the entire world. So it's not about numbers. It's about the power of what truth and advocating for what is right and what is true and what is good, what those things do. And that's what the role of the Christian should be.
Well said. I really enjoyed this podcast episode tonight. I really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like we could have gone like another hour or so, but it would have been way past Jacob's bedtime. With that said, obviously I'd love to have you guys back on, whenever you guys want to come back on. It'll probably help Jacob when our new starting time, 6 o'clock, in 2024. So that might be a little bit better. Also, Jacob, I think you're selling yourself short. Did you mention your own podcast that people can go listen to and tune into?
Oh yeah. So, you can follow me at Biblical Anarchy. And if you, want to listen to more about these ideas, I have my own podcast through the Libertarian Christian Institute, which again, plugging the book on my left, wrote the book Faith Seeking Freedom. So, hey, go to libertarianchristians.com, get the book if you haven't already, because it's a great sort of like, I mean, it's a very short read. I mean, it's not very thick. We're talking about, you know, a little over 100 pages. So you can read it in a night or two. And it kind of covers a lot of, you know, we try to cover a lot here, but there's probably a lot of little questions that people might still have if they're learning about libertarianism for the first time and wondering how it works with Christianity. So that book's a great place to start. We have a lot of podcasts, the Libertarian Christian Institute. We call it the Christians for Liberty Network. So you can go to libertarianchristians.com and check all of those out. Or if you want to find my podcast specifically, that's the biblicalanarchypodcast.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being here. And like I said, hopefully we get to see you guys come back onto the show soon. And we'll continue the discussion. And as we end every show, thank everyone for tuning in. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, comment. Helps the algorithm, helps more people find this video and this podcast. And the best thing you can do to support this podcast that is absolutely free, it doesn't cost you a dime, is to share this with someone who you would think would find it interesting. And on that note, this is the end of our 2023 podcast lineup. And thanks everyone for tuning in. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everybody. And we'll see you all in 2024. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.